Hi, welcome to Bookie. Today we will unlock the book range, Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. The book puts forward the view that becoming a generalist is the way to adapt and grow in the modern era. Since the publication of the book Peak, Secrets from the New Science of Expertise, the theory of deliberate practice has become popular. The theory reasons that a person can master a specific field if they set a goal, stay focused on continuous practice, and make constant improvements after receiving critical feedback. They must stay committed to this course of action for a long period, 10,000 hours, for example, to master that particular field. The deliberate practice theory is popular because it resonates with an essential perspective in contemporary society, specialization. The idea of specialization came about during the Industrial Revolution, 200 or 300 years ago. The core idea goes like this: in the face of a super complicated and enormous task that is impossible for an individual to accomplish, it is imperative to organize the masses, where each person plays a small part in the success of this complex system. In the military, for example, scouts, signal corps, machine gunners, and chiefs of staff all have their unique expertise. Armies won't function well without any one of them. Such a phenomenon is the product of the professional division of labor. The deliberate practice theory is founded on the premise of a specialized division of labor. Want to become a great sniper? Persistent practice is all it takes, and after putting in the requisite amount of hours to hone the skill, firing off a few thousand boxes of ammo, you too can become a high-tier sniper. In his book Range, however, the author David Epstein puts forth an opposing point of view. He believes that the contexts in which deliberate practice applies are much narrower than many people imagine. Deliberate practice only applies to areas such as sports, music, chess, and other domains where the rules are clear-cut and actions are repeated. But in real life, most working environments are complicated and ever-changing. Every time one encounters a problem, one faces new challenges, and there is less opportunity for repeated practice. Moreover, often one receives vague and delayed feedback. If one wants to remain competitive in such a complicated and ever-shifting environment, Epstein asserts that it is better to be a generalist with late specialization than to be a specialist. The author himself followed the path of the generalist. Majoring in earth and environmental sciences and minoring in astronomy at Columbia University, he was an active member of Columbia's track and field team, helping them win multiple trophies. After graduating, Epstein changed his career path to media and became a writer for Sports Illustrated. He specialized in sports news and related scientific issues. He covered numerous major stories and won awards from the Society of Professional Journalists. That's not all, however. Epstein is also a famous best-selling author. He wasn't just riding on the coattails of deliberate practice. This book was written based on scientific research and his personal experiences. Epstein combines his research and data-gathering ability as a professional journalist with solid and rigorous studies, reminding us that perhaps late specialization is a more pervasive path to personal growth in a complex and unpredictable environment. Next, we will gain insight into the major points of this book in three parts. Part 1, is starting deliberate practice as early as possible universally applicable? Part 2, what types of talents can better adapt to wicked learning environments in real life? Part 3, how can you become a generalist? The deliberate practice theory tells us that if we are to build up enough practice hours in a specific niche, we need to specialize in a field as early as possible. This theory caters to a parent's ideology of winning at the starting line, and to the extreme specialization that has won broad support in this era. However, it has not occurred to many that deliberate practice, starting as early as possible, may not be the universal key to becoming a talent today and in the future. Many know the saying, "There is more than one way to success." Two internationally renowned athletic superstars, Tiger Woods and Roger Federer, took two very different developmental paths. Woods took the developmental path of a genius accompanied by deliberate practice, while Federer took the developmental course of a regular guy as a late bloomer. First off, let's look at Woods. If anyone is a genius born different from the rest, Woods is certainly one of them. At 6 months old, Woods could stand steadily on his father's palm. At 10 months old, he could swing a short golf club while most children of his age were still crawling on the floor. The extraordinary athleticism Woods was born with helped him win the title of 10 and under division in his first golf tournament at the age of 2. Everybody quickly noticed his talent, and his father was intensely focused on his son's development. When Woods was 3 years old, his dad had already started planning this golf genius's future. At 4, Woods was already participating in professional training, practicing up to 8 hours a day. This intense specialized training is an essential component of the deliberate practice theory. As such, Woods became a model for the deliberate practice theory. Now we turn our attention to Federer. If Woods is a natural practitioner of deliberate practice and a model for early specialization in a specific field, then Federer is an excellent example of an obfuscated youth turning into a great success in the latter part of his life. Federer did not start specializing early. He played a dazzling array of sports, including skiing, wrestling, swimming, skateboarding, soccer, basketball, squash, handball, table tennis, and badminton. Not until his teenage years did he turn his attention to tennis. He started performing well and therefore drew some attention. Still, Federer displayed a lack of commitment to tennis, preferring to play soccer. Moreover, because he wanted to remain with his buddies, Federer gave up the opportunity to move up to a group of older players. Unbelievably, Federer's mom did not bother to plan her son's tennis career, even though she was a tennis coach. She was unwilling to go through the trouble of coaching him because she disliked Federer's unusual serve technique and return strokes. Federer's path was the opposite of starting and specializing as early as possible. So how did he become a Grand Slam winner multiple times and a legendary tennis player? Epstein notices that Federer developed exceptional athleticism and hand-eye coordination by participating in many sports outside of tennis. Federer's developmental process is by no means an isolated case. His development is common in the sports world. Epstein observed that some studies found that the deliberate practice theory overlooks elite athletes' sampling period in their early years. At the peak of their careers, elite athletes spend more time than average athletes of the same age on highly specialized deliberate practice, training nearly 15 hours per week compared to the 5 to 10 hours by average athletes. But researchers also found that these elite athletes devote less time early in their development to deliberate practice. They first go through what is called a sampling period, dabbling in various sports. After they have trained their muscles for diverse sporting needs as thoroughly as Federer and discovered their potential and personal preferences, they will then focus on that specific area and start technical practice. A process that Epstein calls late specialization. Federer's developmental path and the discovery of the sampling period tell us that early specialization in one field is not the only way to become successful, nor is it as effective as the public generally assumes. Some people who appear to have succeeded through deliberate practice may have undergone a sampling period before deliberate practice. Their successes are also a product of late specialization. Epstein warns that when you decide to enter a professional domain, it is essential to find out whether it has a kind learning environment or a wicked learning environment, because deliberate practice only applies to the former. If the chosen method is incompatible with the environment, it will be useless to apply it, even if you practice as much as possible. Tiger Woods and Roger Federer came up in kind learning environments where repeating problem patterns and having access to prompt and accurate feedback are the norm. Learners can make significant progress in their domains if they participate seriously and strive to improve. These domains include sports, music performance, and even firefighting. That said, researchers agree that chess and golf are the two best representatives of kind learning environments. But it is a mistake to think that all fields have the same features of the kind learning environment that chess and golf enjoy. Game rules in other fields can be vague and erratic with rare to none repeating patterns. Even worse, the feedback is often delayed or inaccurate, thereby creating a wicked learning environment. If you intend to develop in such an environment, deliberate practice will not be of any use to you. This also explains why athletes trained in kind environments often reflect a weakness in adapting. Many retired athletes who entered the wicked learning environment of stock markets or entrepreneurship end up facing investment failures, resulting in a drop in their living standards and even bankruptcy. If you fail to adopt the approach suitable for the environment you are in, no matter how hard you try, you drift away from your goal. That concludes the first part of our bookie: Is Starting Deliberate Practice as Early as Possible Universally Applicable? We learned about the different developmental paths of Woods and Federer, as well as the sampling period overlooked by the deliberate practice theory. We also found that getting a head start, specializing in a specific field as early as possible, and lengthy practice is not the only path to success, nor is it as effective as the public thinks. In addition, only domains with a kind learning environment are suitable for people to take deliberate practice. Yet, most of the domains we face in life have a wicked learning environment. Copying the deliberate practice approach in such environments can cause serious problems.